Bye.
Could you comment on being the descendants of Kenaz, Caleb, Othniel? Is the suggestion that their roots are Gentile?
The family of Caleb come down from
being a Kenazite, the son of Jephunneh.
The descent of Caleb comes down through from Judah, so he was of the tribe of Judah. Are you suggesting that Kenaz is a Gentile name, or?
I'm thinking, a descendant of Esau, Kenaz.
Yes. I don't know I'm not exactly certain of the connection. Can anyone help you there? Right. Thank you.
I always got under the impression that Caleb had a Gentile origin, but the Lord in His grace accepted him into the royal tribe.
Right.
And he proved himself to be a man who followed God wholeheartedly. So
right.
He's not the God of the Jews only.
That's right. Thank you for that. Thank you. Anyone else?
Roots are Gentile,
that
he would have the privileges that he enjoyed as one who would go in behalf of his Joshua, or with his Joshua, spying out the land, and then coming into the blessings that the people of God enjoyed.
Yes, possessing the land of the people themselves.
Yes.
Any other? All right, that's no break. Shall we break the quarter part? Well, the Solomon is a relatively small book, 8 chapters, so that enables us to spend less time on this sort of formal approach, and to enjoy the Bible reading approach, which I find always a wonderful way of coming to grips with the meaning of the passages or subject before us, which we were looking at. And it's a system which we still use in Britain. Not sadly in the individual assemblies now. It used to be so, and it was one of the reasons, I believe, for the knowledge of the Word of God, which in years gone by was shown by assemblies in Britain, was that their method of teaching weekly was by means of a Bible reading. That sadly has died out. I think possibly the war had an effect upon that, because brethren were away from home, and as a result, it became a weekly ministry meeting. But Bible readings are still sort of maintained in on a area basis and in weekly basis, where you go away for a whole week and just study by means of Bible reading certain passages or topics and so on, and they are still used and have been proved very popular and very profitable. So, but what Randy said about them is that you need to come prepared, because it's necessary to read up the passage from Bible reading beforehand and study it yourself, because the Bible reading is done by you. In other words, it's led from the front, but you are the contributors and participators in it. And it only is successful in as much as you have brethren who've been exercised to study it and are prepared to bring their own contributions to it, so that everybody benefits from the knowledge of everyone who's present, and the fruit of their labors in the Word. So we look forward to that, and trust that will be a successful venture. It will also break up this pattern of long periods of formal teaching. Let's turn, shall we, to the book of Joshua, and again, and we will, what we're going to do is just read little passages and to get through some of these chapters. And we'll start in chapter 16. Chapter 16, and we'll move about a bit after that. Chapter 16, and we'll read from verse 1. The lot of the children of Joseph fell from Jordan by Jericho unto the water of Jericho on the east, to the wilderness that goeth up from Jericho throughout Mount Bethel. Goes out from Bethel to Luz, passes along into the borders of the of Araki to Ataroth. Goes down westward to the coast of Japhleti, and to the coast of Bethoron, the Nether, the Giza, going out thereof are at the sea. So the children of Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim took their inheritance. And then we are told of the land of Ephraim. But when you come down to verse 10, you'll notice there is a little note about their possession, and it says, "And they drave not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Giza. The Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day, and serve under tribute." So Joseph's lot, and that includes, of course, the two tribes in this case, Joseph's lot began at Jordan, the river of death, led up to Bethel, the house of God. And in fact, the area which was given to them was a beautiful and fertile area. Shechem, Samaria, Tirzah, all beautiful areas in the land of Canaan. And the tribe of Ephraim, which is second in part of this chapter, the tribe of Ephraim became the dominant tribe alongside of the tribe of Judah. And in fact, in the divided kingdom, became the dominant tribe in the 10 tribes and rival to the neighboring kingdom of Judah, which was based upon Judah and Benjamin. But Ephraim does not clear the land of its original possessors. As we read in the last verse, they drave not out the Canaanites. And so they didn't do that. There was the danger always of compromise and not fully carrying out the word of God. And Ephraim did not do that. God had told them to drive the Canaanites out, but they found it an easier task to let their enemies remain in their midst. And in fact, to serve them under tribute, as the last verse tells us. So in a sense, these people of Ephraim compromised with what God had told them to do. You know, compromise has been described as the endeavor to make the best of incompatibles. And that's fatal in the servant of God, as well as it's fatal in the Christian church. See, the church sets out to spiritualize the world, and church and world are incompatible. But the church which sets out to spiritualize the world will soon find that the world will secularize the church. You see, good and evil, light and darkness, right and wrong, truth and error are incompatible. And what happens is that when those things are compromised, it's the light and the right and the good and the truth which are in actual fact damaged. So they took the inheritance, but they didn't really take possession of it. It belonged to them, but they failed to appropriate it in all its fullness, because they left the Canaanites, as the last verse 10 tells us, they left them in possession. Really, we say this again and again and again in the book of Joshua, but the things of God are ours by divine grace, and we must make them our own by our devotion and our obedience. Now let's turn over to another passage, because we're going to skip through like this at the present moment. We're going to turn over to chapter 17. And a rather strange incident in chapter 17, which we want to read about. And now this particularly deals with the tribe of Manasseh. And so we read from verse 3. "But Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, had no sons but daughters. And these are the names of his daughters, Mahla, Noah, Algra, Milcah, and Tirzah. And they came before Eleazar the priest, and before Joshua son of Nun, and before the princes, saying, the Lord commanded Moses to give us an inheritance among our brethren. Therefore, according to the commandment of the Lord, he gave them an inheritance among the brethren of their father. And they fell 10 portions to Manasseh beside the land of Gilead and Bashan, which were on the other side, Jordan. Because the daughters of Manasseh had an inheritance amongst his sons, and the rest of the sons of Manasseh had the land of Gilead. So here are 5 women who claim an inheritance which should have been given to sons, but their father had no sons. Let's go back to the background to this, and we're going back to the book of Numbers for a moment. Numbers chapter 27. And this is the instance they refer to. Then came the daughters of Zelophehad, and they stood, verse 2, they stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest, before the princes and all the congregation, by the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, saying, our father died in the wilderness, he was not in the company of them that gathered themselves together against the Lord in the company of Korah, but died in his own sin and had no sons. Why should the name of our father be done away with from among his family, because he hath no son? Give us therefore a possession among the brethren of our father. And Moses brought their cause before the Lord. And the Lord spake unto Moses, the daughters of Zelophehad, speak right. Thou shalt surely give them a portion, possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren. And thou shalt cause inheritance of their father to pass unto them. And so the law is made, and thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a man die and have no son, he shall cause his inheritance to pass unto his daughter. If he have no daughter, then he shall give his inheritance unto his brethren. If he have no brethren, then he shall give his inheritance unto again, oh, to the next little bit in this request, and it's in chapter 36. The same book. Chapter 36 of Numbers. Verse 5. Or after the verse 1, the chief fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, the families of the sons of Joseph, came near and spake before Moses, for the princes, the chief fathers of the children of Israel, and they said, the Lord commanded my Lord, give the land for inheritance by lot to the children of Israel, and my Lord is commanded by the Lord to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, unto his daughters. And if they be married to any of the sons of the other tribes, of the children of Israel, then shall the inheritance be taken from the inheritance of our fathers, to put the inheritance of the tribe. Whereunto they are received, so shall it be taken from the lot of our inheritance. They were worried that the tribe's inheritance would be decreased by this particular action of marriage to someone outside the tribe. And when the jubilee of the children of Israel shall be, then shall the inheritance be put the inheritance of the tribe unto their received. So shall the inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers. Moses commanded the children of Israel, saying, according to the word of the Lord, saying, the tribe of the sons of Joseph has said, well, this is the thing which the Lord has commanded concerning my daughters of Zelophehad, saying, let them marry to whom they think best, only to the family of the tribe of their father shall they marry. So shall not the inheritance of the children of Israel move from tribe to tribe, and so on. Now, there's a strange little incident here in the book of Joshua, and it concerns inheritance. It concerns these 5 daughters who father died and he had no sons, and so the inheritance of their father would be lost, but they request that they inherit. And that created a problem for the fathers of their tribe, because if they married, the possession of the land, which was the kingdom through their father, which was granted by Moses, in this case, would then go to the other tribe in which they married, and the tribe itself, the original tribe, would lose its land. That was the law then, which was then made, that if they did marry, it had to be someone of the same tribe, so that the land was not lost to another tribe. So in the civil law then, there was this particular arrangement made, first of all, that in the case of his daughters, land did come to them. They had a right to the inheritance. And secondly, that right had to be maintained in relation to the land, to the inheritance of the tribe, by the fact that they were to marry within the tribe itself. Now, they're in the land, and they come to Eliezer and Joshua. To Eliezer, because Eliezer was involved in the distribution of the land, and it was the, his name was put first because it was to him that the lot was given to be cast. And their concern is to possess that which they believed to be theirs, inheritance which had been, would have been their father's. And so they come and remind him of this claim. Remind leaders of this particular claim. Now I want you to notice what they say. We read these passages in Numbers, and the thing which stands out there is their faith. You know, they hadn't entered the land in the book of Numbers. And they were coming, and they were requesting that they should have their father's inheritance in the land. In other words, they were showing by the request their confidence in faith and faith that God's promise of giving this people this land would be fulfilled. And they had no doubt, because they made the request, that God would have the land and there would be a possession which would have been their father's in that land. So their faith is seen in their coming and having no suggestion of doubt at all in their minds that there would have been a land to inherit, and that they wanted to know about the portion which would have been their father. So they were certain of God's intention to get them in the land and in his ability so to do. Now they come to Eliezer and Joshua to implement what had been promised them by Moses in the book of Numbers, and the tribe of Manasseh, which they belonged to, now has received its inheritance. They came to ask for the inheritance which had been promised to them. Now, what they had done, in fact, was promised, was treated as a reality in their experience. The promise which God had made long before to them, before ever the reality had come into being, the possession of the land. But when they came into the possession of the land, they come and make that promise a reality in the possession of land. It was a very strange incident. What's the point of it anyway? What's the point of it? Well, let me just go now into the New Testament. You know, it would seem as if the Lord could not be the inheritor of the throne of David. That was his inheritance. Either through Joseph, because he was not the son of Joseph, as was supposed to be the son of Joseph. Though they claim is made, his legal claim came to him, or through Mary, because Mary was a woman. And because a woman could not inherit, except for this rather remarkable and unusual incident in the Old Testament, where the law was made that, in this case, five women could enter into the inheritance. Eli had no son. He had a daughter. And in the normal event of things, there could have been no claim to the daughter. He had no son. But Genesis is an incident which establishes a claim of daughters to the inheritance. And so, though Eli had no son, but had a daughter, the claim is valid because of this incident here in the Old Testament. And then, of course, whereas indicates the legal claim, it also underlines the fact why it was necessary that Mary should marry Joseph, because she had to marry someone in the same tribe. And so she married someone in the same tribe, indeed, of a similar lineage, Now that's very interesting, a little point here in the book of Joshua. But there it is. And so in other words, when you look at things like that, it is telling us that not only the ceremonial law, which we sort of made wrong, but also in the civil law of Israel also, God always had Christ before him. He comes out in this little strange incident here. Can I go on now to chapter 17 and let's read another little passage and get a wee lesson from that, chapter 17, and we're going to read now in verse 12.
I want to go into the issue of Mary and Joseph for a moment. Would that be all right?
Yes.
I'm not sure that I quite understood what you brought out there.
Yes.
What I had understood, and perhaps this is wrong, is that Joseph carried the royal line of David.
Yes.
But because of the problem with Jeconiah and so on,
yes,
the actual biological descendant of David could not come from that line, and even Solomon had forfeited that right to have one of his offspring sitting on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary carried the biological line of David, and now through her marriage to Joseph, that, you see, the two are joined together so that in Joseph,
yes,
you have the royal line,
yes,
and now you also have him through his marriage of Mary having the fulfillment of the promise of David and the covenant of David that,
yes,
one of his sons would not fail to sit on that throne. So you have the two linked together through that marriage, and thus the Lord Jesus is both the descendant of David without being the direct descendant of Solomon, and yet has a right through Joseph to sit on the throne of David, the royal seat.
Yes, I can see that point. That is the argument which is only put forward. It's based on the fact that the recognition of Joseph as a legal father, though in actual fact he wasn't. What I'm postulating here is that in this incident you have the possibility of the inheritance of a claim being held not by the male but by the female, because this inheritance is held by the female here. So that the claim of Mary would be valid. That's the point I'm making as well to this. But only valid in as much as she married someone within the tribe, which she did, of course, because she married Joseph.
How do you know that Mary had only one
had no
brother?
Genealogy. You find it in Matthew, and you have the word in Matthew and Luke?
I look in Matthew and I look in Luke. He said that her only having brothers.
We take it from the fact that it's only her mentioned. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you say that Joseph is not the legal father?
No, I said he's taken to be the legal father of Christ, yes. But what I said was he's not the actual father of Christ. Because Luke has a note as was supposed to be.
So are you saying, I didn't take it away any, but I think,
yes,
it's sort of a third dimension. Yes. I see the establishment of the legal right.
Yes.
I see the establishment of the legal right to the throne through Joseph.
Yes.
Because he was his legal father.
Yes.
And then the natural right, that is, of the seed of David,
yes,
through David's other son, Nathan, which,
yes,
then eventuated,
yes,
in Mary being born.
Yes.
But then I thought you were adding a third dimension by saying that it would be necessary for there to be land in order for this right to be able to exist. Is that what you're saying? Or
what I'm saying is the claim to the inheritance, in this case, it would be the claim to the throne.
Right.
But in this particular incident, which I've indicated here, it enabled the claim to be made through the female line here, rather than the male line. Now, if you accept the legal line of Joseph, that's fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
But you also got this other incident in civil law of Israel which allows the female to inherit. So in other words, you have a dual claim. You have the legal claim of Joseph, but you have this claim, which is established back as a result of this particular ruling in the law of Israel concerning these daughters.
Okay.
So what I'm saying, in a sense, they're not really contradicting what Henry is saying in regard to the legal claim of Joseph, but I'm saying there is another claim as well, and this is the other claim of the law.
So it is a third dimension to it. Thank you.
Does that make sense? And you're not saying that it wasn't a legal claim in the case of Joseph. What I am saying is that there is this extra claim which is indicated by this particular thing in civil law, in the civil law of Israel, that the female descendant could inherit here the claim to land or whatever it was. And so you've got a dual claim in that sense. But you could only inherit it in as much as she married someone within the same tribe. And of course, that's exactly what she did. She fulfilled that. That's right. Let's move on then, shall we, to chapter 17. Chapter 17, verse 12. Verse 13. And it came to pass, when the children of Israel waxed strong, and they put the Canaanites to tribute, did not utterly drive them out. The children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, Why hast thou given me but one lot, and one portion to inherit, seeing am I great people? For as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto. And Joshua answered them, If thou be a great people, then get thee up to the wood country, and cut down for thyself there in the land of the Perizzites and the giants. If Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. And the children of Joseph said, The hill is not enough for us. And all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both they of Bethshan and her towns. They were the valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, Thou art a great people, and hast great power. Thou shalt not have one lot only. But the mountain shall be thine, for it is a wood. And thou shalt cut it down, and the outgoings of it shall be thine. For thou shalt drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong. Now, you know, the apportioning of land was really the responsibility of Eliezer. And it's to Eliezer they should have come. They didn't come to Eliezer in this case. They came, unlike the daughters of this good man before, who came to Eliezer, they came to Joshua. And it's significant that they should do so because Joshua was of the tribe of Ephraim, and it was the children of the tribe of Ephraim that came. They probably thought that because Joshua was their relative, he would be disposed to favor his own tribe. And to increase the greatness of the tribe of Ephraim would be, of course, to increase his own greatness. So they thought that was one good reason why they should come. Notice what they complained of. They complained, verse 14, saying, I am a great people. And because they were a great people, they thought they not received a portion which was worthy of their inheritance, of their greatness. And they boasted, in fact, that previous experience should have given them previous blessing should have given them a bigger portion. Because verse 14 says, Inasmuch as the Lord hath blessed me up until now, so that they boasted that their past blessing should now receive a greater reward. And so they complained, we haven't enough room. Now, the enemy were deeply entrenched in their territory. It didn't seem to concern them too much. And, they were not satisfied with their lot, not because of the enemy being entrenched, but because they didn't seem to have enough land. Not enough room. And they were dissatisfied with their lot. You know, it's a cry we hear sometimes today, isn't it? I'm not really satisfied. I haven't got enough room for my gift. I want a larger sphere of service. And the sad thing was that in the sphere in which God had given them, the enemy was still entrenched. We discontented? Not enough scope for our gift or for our service. We want a larger sphere. But the question we need to ask our hearts is this: have we yet possessed the lot which God has given to us? Is it that we're living to a full capacity where we are? Have we any excuse for not taking possession of what God has made our own? And so what he does is he says, well, all right, if you're great, well, you've got to show your greatness. And you show it by taking possession of what you've got. And so he tells them to go up to the mountains and to cut down the trees, to drive out their foes, and to enlarge their borders by cultivating their possessions rather by seeking more ground. So verse 15 says, if you be a great people, then get thee up the country, cut down for thyself, then the land of the Perizzites and the giants of Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. You know, in the divine plan, the possession, the way into a larger inheritance, is the expulsion of enemies. And we have spiritual foes against whom we have been to contend, and in defeating them, we possess more and more of the possession. Now, I want you to turn over to another little passage, because it relates to the same thing. And it's all right for someone to stand out here and say something to you. But the question you've got to, which is asked in some people's minds, and it will be asked in my mind, is, well, if that person who's telling us to do this and that and t'other, does he do it himself? I mean, that's the important thing. It's the matter of example. Well, here is Joshua, and he's saying, right, you want more land? All you want to do is go up, dispossess your enemies, cut down the trees, cultivate the forest, and so on. You've got the land, go in and possess it. Do just that. Well, let's turn over then. Here's a man who's been telling him to do this hard thing. So let's now go over to chapter 19. Chapter 19. And verse 49. Chapter 19 and verse 49. When they had made an end of dividing the land for inheritance by their coasts, the children of Israel gave an inheritance to Joshua the son of Nun among them. Now, all the division had been by lot. But it says here that the children of Israel gave it to Joshua the son of Nun. According to the word of the Lord, they gave him the city which he asked, even Timnath-Serah in Mount Ephraim. And he built the city and dwelt therein. And so we are told of the inheritance of this man, Joshua. One thing you want to notice, first of all, is this, that it was after all the tribes had received their inheritance that he received his, Timnath-Serah. So he waited to the very last. He was a man who sought not his own interests, his own things, but those of others. He didn't ask for the kingdom for himself, only a city in which he dwelt. And it was a modest inheritance. All he asked for was this place of Timnath-Serah in Mount Ephraim. You know, such was the generosity of this person that he accepted something which was much less than many of his contemporaries probably would have claimed under similar circumstances. But his choice was suggestive. Timnath-Serah. Now, Timnath-Serah was in the mountains of Ephraim, and it was a city in rough, uncultivated hill district. A part of the lot which the children of Joseph, the Ephraimites, had complained earlier in the passage we read, that a lot pointed to them, was not worthy of their greatness. It was in that lot which he had told them to go up to the mountains and prove their greatness by taking possession of what was theirs in the appointment of God. He proved now that he was ready to act upon his own advice himself and do that thing. And he went up in the mountains of Ephraim and possessed his possessions by doing what he had told them to do. You know, they gave him a city which he asked. He spent his life building a nation and appropriately ended the work of building a city. He worked until the end, this time building a city. They gave him a city. The true Joshua said, ask of me, and I will give you the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost part of the earth for thy possession. And he will reign until he's put all enemies under his feet. And he'll take his personal possession. Timnath-Sera means an abundant portion, a portion of abundance. And when the Lord takes his possession, he'll feel the travel of his soul. He'll be satisfied. I've got a question at the back.
Am I understanding correctly that you see the actions in the verse 14 and 15 of the descendants of Joseph as being a negative thing?
As being a
negative.
Yes, I take it as that because their land was they wanted a bigger portion. They hadn't possessed what they already had, and that's what he's starting to do, really.
That brings up a question then for me. As we started this whole study,
yes.
You made the statement that inheritance required initiative,
yes.
In possession.
Yes.
My mind goes to Elisha,
yes.
Saying, I want a double portion.
Yes.
It goes to Jacob saying, I will not let go until you bless me.
Yes.
And I look at this portion and I say, well, there's initiative. But you're seeing something different. Can you tell me what the difference is between the initiative in inheritance and what is taking place here?
Yes, the problem with the Ephraimites was that they wanted more land. But what they weren't prepared to do was to possess the land which was already theirs. Hence, they weren't prepared to cut down the forests and cultivate them. But neither were they prepared to dispossess the land of the former inhabitants, because the Canaanites were already there. So it's not so much the case of showing initiative because they wanted to possess more land, but it would be easier to possess land which wasn't going to be difficult to capture. I think that's what I'm trying to point out. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Just on that particular point, since I happen to, by sovereign, to be in the room at this time. And you may have already covered it, but I just mentioned it again, that you'll have about three or four instances, four in particular, that come to mind throughout this section of people that come asking for things.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're granted the request. Sometimes they're not granted the request that they want. The principle being, sometimes, as with the Ephraimites or the Josephites, they have to develop that which they already have.
Yes.
God won't give us more until we've used that which we have.
Right.
Sometimes he'll just grant us more out of his graciousness.
Yes.
And that he does with some of them, like that come and ask. But others are not going to get anything until they've developed that portion that they've already been given.
Yes. Thank you. Hi.
I'm going to say something that may sound that I'm against my own people now. You know that the sons of Joseph were half Egyptian.
Right, yes, okay. They came from a very notable family in Egypt.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there is a debate in Israel now as to who the Jew is, and they say the Jew has to have a Jewish mother. There are two heads of the tribe who had an Egyptian mother, and nobody argued about the Jewishness, but anyway. Here they are whining with Joshua, in a sense. We don't have enough land, but we're not willing to go and fight the Canaanites and drive them because they have those iron chariots. They forgot all the stuff that the Lord has done before, especially with Hathor, because the Hathor people had chariots too. So they want it handed on a platter, and as the brother was saying, to my mind, they did not have the initiative. They just wanted more land where they don't have to fight the Canaanites. But there's a verse here that you read to us in chapter 16. They drove not the Canaanites who dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day. And I want to point you to a verse in the book of 1 Kings. Now here we are in the glorious rule of Solomon, some 450 years later maybe, close to 500 years. And these are still occupied by Canaanites. King Solomon has gone down and married an Egyptian wife, the daughter of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh, in order to show his prowess, the word of God says in 1 Kings 9 and verse 16, "For Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer and burned it with fire and slain the Canaanites who dwelt in the city, and given it for a present unto his daughter Solomon's wife." And here the Lord's plans were not executed by his people, and to their shame, a heathen king is used by God to clean the city of Gezer of its Canaanite people some 400 years later. And they lacked the initiative of fighting them, not in this particular spot, but again in the mountain. Therefore, the Lord, God's plans do not depend on God's people. If God's people are not going to carry them, then the Lord will use other means of doing it. And as I see here, that it may be an answer to Father's question. Thank you
very much. It's very good. Shall we break there? Because we're going to run short of time. Quarter past? Sorry, Granny.